I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about housing. We're going to talk about what it takes for people to get their own homes, and we're going to talk about why that is so important. We are also going to mark a milestone, the 25th anniversary of Habitat for Humanity's arrival in Indianapolis. We will discuss all of this with a great group of guests. Jim Morris, the CEO and president of Habitat for Humanity of Greater Indianapolis, Precious Bell, a Habitat homeowner, and Andy Frazier, executive director of the Indiana Association for Community Economic Development. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. I'm John Krall. Welcome to this edition of No Limits, where we will be talking about housing and marking the 25th anniversary of Habitat for Humanity in Indianapolis' arrival here in the city. Fortunate to have as my guest today, Jim Morris, who is the president and CEO of Habitat for Humanity of Greater Indianapolis. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Pleasure.
It's good to have you here. Precious Bell, who is a Habitat homeowner. Precious, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
It is good to have you here. And Andy Frazier, who is the executive director of the Indiana Association for Community Economic Development. Andy, welcome to the program.
Greetings. Pleasure to be with you.
I am chuckling because that is a mouthful of a title.
It is.
I think we can assume I'm going to mangle that at least once during the hour.
We go by the acronym of IACED if I happen to lapse and
into jargon, IACED. You can join the conversation today by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, I want to start first, and I'll start with Jim Morris. What does the 25th anniversary of Habitat for Humanity's arrival in Indianapolis signify?
I think it signifies a couple of things. We've obviously achieved some milestones during that time. We've been able to produce and provide over 400 homes during that time frame. But I also think on top of just being what we've been able to do, it speaks to the fact that we've been able to help homeowners transition into a life that they wouldn't have normally been able to have through homeownership being that means to help them transform their own personal lives. So I think that being even more important than the numbers is part of marking the 25th.
Yeah, and I'm going to go in a moment to Precious Bell on that, because I think she can speak to that with probably greater authority than anybody else in the room right now about how that changed her lives. But I'd like to get some idea of how big a problem we have in regard to securing housing for people in Indiana. And Andy Frazier, if you could respond to that, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, so the challenges are numerous, and most of that challenge that we see, because Indiana is a very affordable housing market. The mm-hmm. Indiana Builders Association and the National Builders Association count Indiana as one of the most affordable markets in the country, but where we find much of the challenge in providing housing in local communities and basic stability is an income range of 0 to 50% of, in community development, what we call the area median income. So those are folks that are at the federal poverty line and below that really have a hard time sort of accessing, if you will, either the dream and the opportunity of home ownership or finding a good rental situation that works for them in their local community.
Are there parts of the state that are that struggle with this more than others?
I'd say urban communities have a unique type of challenge with concentrations of poverty. And then what you see in rural communities across the state is the distances that come, the distances that are play a factor in how easy it is for people to get access to housing and then connect to a job or connect to other opportunities that are going to build economic opportunity for them becomes a real challenge. So depending on the region of the state you're in, the challenge is a little bit different, but tend to break down with some commonality amongst urban issues and rural issues.
And just real quickly, are we defining what is an urban area?
Yeah, I would say a city, if it has city in the name, so Indianapolis, South Bend, without spending a lot of time answering that question. And the rural question is an even more difficult one.
Yeah.
What do we mean by rural? It's a general collection of density of place, if you will, a community that organizes itself as a city for its local government structure.
Okay. Well, and we sort of set this up. Precious Bell, could you talk a little bit about, A, how you got involved with Habitat for Humanity, and B, you know, what having a home means to you?
Okay. Habitat for Humanity is just one of the best things that has ever happened to me. And I was just fortunate enough to go to the meeting, went to the meeting, sat there and talked to a lady that was actually a Habitat representative. She gave me an application, told me, you know, to look over and see if maybe this was something that I would like to do. Filled it out. I turned it in, I believe, the next week. She called me within a couple of weeks and said, you're approved for the program. I couldn't believe it. I was so happy. Took her some information that she needed to get the process and everything going. Once that started, I was told that I could go and start doing my panel build. Stanley Securities was my sponsor, which really helped me a lot along the process of building my home. Within about two months or so, my home was built. Dedication was in October 23rd, 2009. So I've been in my home now for 3 years, and it's just lovely, and I love it.
And what... please don't give me a specific street address or anything like that. But what area of the city are you in?
I'm East Central.
Okay. Yeah. And, you know, in terms of how long had you wanted to have a home of your own?
I had always wanted my own home, but I really couldn't afford it. Once I became a single parent, I was just like, you know what, I'm probably not going to be able to have a home until who knows when. But once I had the opportunity and went to the meeting and got the information about Habitat, I said, I can do this.
And where were you living before the home got built?
I was living in an apartment. It was a nice apartment, but very expensive. Mm-hmm. So I was just like strapped for cash, and I was really struggling. And I knew that I couldn't afford the apartment much longer.
And you mentioned that you're a single mother. How many
yes.
children do
I
you
have? I
have
one child, 10-year-old son.
Okay, and what did it mean to him to get...
He was so happy.
His own house.
He was so happy. And I would take him over to the house and show him the things, you know, but first from the cement slab. And then once everything started going and we started building, I would take him over there and he'd see it. And he said, this is my house. I said, yes, one day we will be done and we will move in.
We are talking about housing issues here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Matt, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my question.
Certainly.
I'd like to hear the panel discuss a little bit, you know, given the recent election and kind of the difference between Democrats and Republicans, you know, I think that one of the things that made Habitat for Humanity successful is it actually involves community involvement. You hear that term all the time. But I think that there's a distinct difference when you're helping somebody out who needs a, you know, who needs a leg up, you know, when the local community sees what's happening and is involved in it, versus some sort of state or federal assistance, which mm-hmm. has this huge myth that, well, we're just throwing money away on people who don't appreciate it, who never get off the help, and that sort of thing. So just kind of like to hear people's thoughts on that.
Thank you very much for the call, Matt. Appreciate it. Well, I'll throw this one back to Jim Morris in terms of the, you know, whether Habitat for Humanity fits into some sort of political or government structure, or whether you try to exist to some degree outside that.
I think the caller hit on that, you know, the key word that I heard out of there was community.
Mm-hmm.
And Habitat, we're mostly known for seeing the construction. And, you know, Precious talks about, you know, she participated in building her own home. You know, there's not, most of us can't say that.
Mm-hmm.
We can't say that we actually helped build our own home. But it was along, you know, she mentioned a sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
It really, when you boil it down, it's neighbor helping neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And we facilitate that process. That's our existence, is to bring those two together. And Precious would have never met the people that came on her build at any other time.
Mm-hmm.
But she was able to do that as the other homeowners. So I think he does hit on a key point. We, you know, whether the aisle that you park yourself on politically, it mm-hmm. does come down. Those things are let go when you step on and you actually just start helping each other.
Well, let's take a step back here and talk a little bit then about how Habitat works. We've heard from Precious that she went to a meeting and she fills out a form. What sort of meeting? I mean, suppose I am in a situation like Precious was, and I want to work with Habitat for Humanity to get a house built. How do I go about that?
That's a great question. We now hold what we call Keys to Home Ownership twice a year, once in the spring and once in the fall, and it's a way to engage those who are thinking about home ownership and either feel like they're unsure about what that means and based on their financial situation. So we use that as a way to introduce them to the process and the program and actually help qualify them and have other homeowners who are already in the program to speak to what it takes to partner with. We use that word a lot, partner, mm-hmm. because it truly is them and us together partnering in this program. But once, as Precious mentioned, you're in the program, that consists really of a lot of education. You know, mm-hmm. We call them sweat equity. Mm-hmm. It is in lieu of a down payment, mm-hmm. it is 450 hours that each homeowner goes through, and a lot of that's education from, you know, landscaping to you know, basic budgeting and finance and those kind of elements to prepare you to be in a home. Something I would have actually loved to have had before I got my first home. And those classes then help prepare, but then the volunteer aspect kicks in as well. Precious or any future homeowner would then volunteer not only on their own home but on others' homes as well before they get a chance to actually close on the home and own it and start paying the mortgage and, mm-hmm. and being a part of home ownership.
Well, you mentioned that there are a couple of those meetings every year, one in the fall, one in the spring. Is the one in the fall already occurred?
It just actually happened just recently.
And if people want to find out when the next one would be, where should they go?
Go to our website, and it's indyhabitat.org, indyhabitat.org.
Great. And then from there, after they go to the meeting, they get all of this. They fill out an application. What sorts of things do you look for on the application? She said that she heard the next day that she'd been approved. What to meet the standards? What's involved there?
You know, Andy referenced the fact that affordability is mm-hmm. we're in an affordable community, and that's true. And he referenced some of the numbers. You know, 30% to 50% of the median income mm-hmm. is what we're looking for. So if you took a family of four, generally that's $20,000 to $30,000, for that family. So that's the sort of prerequisite. Mm-hmm. That's the area we serve. And then you're going to look at credit scores. You're going to look at debt. Mm-hmm. Those things. Home ownership is not for everybody at because timing is key. So if you know, you're carrying debt, we might want to work with you. We work with Indianapolis Neighborhood Housing Partnership as well to then prepare that person if they're not quite ready. But they have to qualify in the most basic of sense in that way too, and they have to understand what they're getting into. I've often had it, not normally from future homeowners, but from others who have said, well, it's you're giving them the home, and that couldn't be the farthest from the truth. It's not a giveaway program at all. It's merely giving them some help into being a homeowner.
Well, and when we talk about this, the building of it too, that is one of the aspects. And I know I'm a professor down at Franklin College in my other life, and I know we have students who routinely take part in Habitat builds. How important is that piece of it to Habitat success?
It's vital. It's vital because that's really where we were founded. You know, Miller and Linda Fuller, who founded Habitat back in 1976, that was their vision, that it would literally be one neighbor helping another and providing a no-interest mortgage so that that mortgage can then help provide another home for a future neighbor.
Precious Bell, I'm going to ask you real quickly. Okay. Have you continued to stay in touch with the people who helped build your home in any way? Or
Stanley, I have seen a couple people that work there, and I've seen them at different things that I volunteer at, because I still volunteer for, I did Super Bowl, I did the Super Build. And so, yeah, I still try to stay in contact with them and a lot of the ladies at Habitat also, Jessica and Jennifer and Tracy.
So you've developed friendships then
yes,
out
I
of
have.
This process too, that so that neighbor piece that you're talking about is something that's facilitated out of this. And you say you've done 400 and some homes since you came here 25 years ago?
That's correct.
I think I read somewhere 416. Are you on your next one now?
Right. Well, we have seven going right now.
We could be at 425 by the end of the year. We are talking about housing here on No Limits. My guests are Jim Morris, Precious Bell, and Andy Frazier. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about housing and marking the 25th anniversary of Habitat for Humanity in Indianapolis's arrival here in the city. My guests are Jim Morris, who is the president and CEO of Habitat for Humanity of Greater Indianapolis, Precious Bell, who is a Habitat homeowner, and Andy Frazier, who is the executive director of the Indiana Association for Community Economic Development. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, Andy Frazier, I want to talk a little bit now about what really are the big challenges, you know, that we confront in terms of providing affordable housing for people. As an overview, what's the biggest one out there right now?
Yeah, so if I can pick up on the last caller's question, I think a real key point to underline in that challenge issue is the role Habitat plays with volunteers and the human capacity of neighbors helping neighbors, coming alongside public resources mm-hmm. and a safety net that we create in this community and in this nation in order to help people achieve homeownership and safe, decent, stable housing. And one of the things our members talk about in this housing recession, if you will, is just the fact that resources continue to be a challenge for them mm-hmm. to do their work, whether that's support and philanthropy dropping off for them, whether those are cutbacks in federal funds. More and more people are walking in the door of our member agencies across the state, and the resources available to support them are less and less. So anytime we're out with members across the state, the first thing we hear about is always the challenge of resources. And our membership, just to give you a sense, represents that diversity of what we talk about in terms of economic opportunity and community revitalization. So on one end of that is basic needs work, human services, ending homelessness, up through a continuum that represents housing counseling and homeownership opportunity, the production and development of housing, but then also small business counseling is part of that. Several of our members do workforce development work. And then, you know, at the top end of that continuum is the basic work of revitalizing communities through business investment and traditional economic development activities. So our members really see the continuum of what happens in communities. And over again, it's this notion of the challenges they're confronting are resource related.
How large a problem are we to? I mean, you know, obviously, if Habitat for Humanity is built just under 420 homes in 25 years, that works out to a little bit less than 20 per year. I somehow suspect that the housing need is greater than 20 fresh starts a year. How big a problem are we talking about, Andy?
In places like Indianapolis, a big part of what we see is the discrepancy between the affordability and the availability of the stock that we have and where folks need that housing to be, if you will. So Indianapolis, Marion County is confronted by the challenge, for instance, of vacancy and abandonment in some of our core urban neighborhoods. And that's a number of issues that our members, local community development corporations, and the city of Indianapolis work on. How do we deal with this property of housing in the core that nobody is living in at this mm-hmm. point? There's still a need for housing, but essentially what doesn't line up is the income that someone has availability and where that housing sits in a community. And so I'd say the pieces of this are all interconnected at the end of the day. It's why conversations around education reform and transportation are so important to discussions of housing, because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, where we have housing produced needs to be connected to the job centers in our local community and needs to be connected in a way that people have access to opportunity.
We are talking about housing here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've gotten a tweet actually from a listener named Jessica. I'm going to paraphrase here. It says, this is for Precious, Precious Bell, who's a Habitat homeowner, wants to know what you would say to families who would like to get involved in Habitat. We're in a situation similar to yours. What advice would you give them or counsel?
My advice would definitely be to go to one of the meetings and at least just try to go there and try to understand exactly what Habitat is, how they can help you. Like Jim was saying, also, if your credit isn't that well, they might even be able to point you somewhere else that can help you if Habitat can help you. And just try. And I'm glad I did try for it. I at least went and I got the knowledge, and I'm just grateful for everything that I have.
How did you first hear about Habitat?
I actually heard about it through one of my friends. And she told me about it, and she had tried for it, but due to her credit and some other things she had going on, she wasn't approved for the program. So she said, why don't you go and why don't you try?
How long had you wanted your own home before this happened?
Before this happened, at least 2 to 3 years before, because I was just tired of the apartment and tired of having to deal with the slumlords and the rent going up, regardless to whether you're going to fix things that needs to be fixed. And I was just tired of that. Just wanted my own.
Had you grown up in Indianapolis, or
yes?
So this is your home, and at I'm trying to figure out how I want to frame this question. Was this the first house that
yes.
you'd ever owned
yes.
or lived in? So this was a huge lifestyle change for
yes.
you too. Then,
mm-hmm.
in what ways has it changed your life? What's been the biggest one?
It has changed my life to really work hard, because that's the hardest work I ever have done in my life, building a home. I didn't understand and I didn't know what I was getting myself into. But once it started rolling and I seen the progress and my house was just coming up from a cement slab to this beautiful house, I was just so excited and happy. And like I said, once again, grateful that I had this.
Have you had any regrets since you did it?
None.
What was the hardest thing about going through the process?
The hardest thing, I think, was actually trying to be there as much as I could, because I also have a full-time job. So sometimes that actually came into play where I couldn't be there a lot. But my job was very supportive. And they even let me take some time without pay just so I could be there to build on my home.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Jim Morris, you know, when we talk about Precious's story, she talks about other options if your credit's not good or whatever, because I'm sure there are going to be people out there who are worried about this. What other opportunities do they have?
Well,
if you're counseling them out, where are you counseling them to?
Sure. I mentioned Indianapolis Neighborhood Housing Partnership. We have a mm-hmm. program that we work in collaboration with them called Bridge to Home Ownership. So it's them going through a program to help work on whatever particular financial issue it may be, whether it's debt, whether it's credit score. And we work in tandem so that mm-hmm. they can be going through our program and theirs at the same time. So you don't have to, you know, go through what might be several months and then have to then go through our program for several months. So it helps to speed up that process. There are many other resources out there depending on the need of where that person might be to get either financial counseling and understand where they are. To begin work, you know, we've had several stories of current homeowners who came in and didn't quite have the qualifications and worked for a couple of years to come back, and because this was their goal, mm-hmm. and they were going to make it happen. So there's plenty of you know, Andy used the term access, and I think mm-hmm. right now there are plenty of resources to help provide access. Sometimes getting those resources in the right hands is, you know, part of the challenge.
Well, and the other question I guess I would ask Jim Morris is that suppose you have someone, you know, one of Precious's friend, Precious Bell's friend, who was turned down because her credit score wasn't that great. Are there steps people can take? You know, is it if they apply once and are turned down, is that it? Or can you counsel them and say, you know, if you do this, that, and the other, we will take a look at this again?
Yeah, and that's actually what we would do. I mean, our role is to encourage the, you know, that path and that journey to home ownership. So if, you know, name the particular that might be the barrier to that, we would definitely then outline, well, here's either a resource or mm-hmm. we're going to walk with you together, like in the Bridge to Home Ownership program with INHP. We're gonna figure out what it may be. We're gonna maybe give you that path that that needs to happen and some steps you need to take to come back and you know, eventually become a homeowner.
We are talking about housing here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, Andy Frazier, you'd mentioned obviously that this is the housing challenges are all interconnected. Education reform, transportation, all of those things are part of this. What's the biggest piece? What's the piece that, you know, in your view, we should be focusing on the most right now that would have the greatest impact on the housing challenges? We'll say here in central Indiana, but then expand it out to the state if there are different challenges.
So I'll give you two answers to that question.
Sure.
And one is not housing specific. I think it goes back to the context of the question that the first caller raised, and Jim built on this idea, the notion of neighbor helping neighbor. At the end of the day, community improvement doesn't happen, and that means access to housing for others, without neighbors knowing each mm-hmm. other, being connected to each other, and lending a hand along the way. And Habitat is a great means to provide that opportunity, but there are others, whether it's participating in your kids' PTO program at school, whether it's, you know, just walking the street and picking up the litter, whether it's attending the neighborhood meeting. At the end of the day, those close relationships of neighbors helping neighbors is one of the biggest things that can make a difference in building the human capacity to challenge and fix neighborhoods. And then I think that has to come alongside the technical expertise that organizations like Habitat have mm-hmm. to transform the environment. So that's sort of the question of how do we build relationships? How do we get more human capacity to do this?
Mm-hmm.
The other side of that challenge.
Which, to some degree, was the question I was kind of asking about the scale. I was not attempting in any way to demean what Habitat for Humanity is doing here, but
right.
but I assume there is a much greater need than what is a very specific and targeted program can deal with, and how we respond to that much larger need.
Right. And then the other answer to that question, I would say, and something that a number of our members and communities across the state are dealing with, is this issue of vacancy and abandonment in mm-hmm. local communities. The sense that we have a housing stock that's not put to a productive purpose anymore, and how do we grapple with that? IECED had the opportunity to work with Jim Kelly, a professor at Notre Dame Law School, and Jenna Radice, who's the consultant for the city of Indianapolis, working mm-hmm. on these issues. And we went up to Lake County, met with the Lake County Housing Task Force, which mm-hmm. is convened and facilitated by one of our members, the Northwest Indiana Reinvestment Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And we're helping that community grapple with and think about what are the strategies we can put in place to deal with the abandonment left behind in our communities as a result of housing displacement, if you will. And so that's an issue we've made our number one legislative priority going into the upcoming legislative session, is to try and make enhancements both in the tools that local units of government and our members have resources and access to. And then related to that is, how does Indiana's property tax foreclosure system support a redevelopment agenda in local communities? So housing abandonment and sort of the mismatch of housing, especially in urban communities, but across the state, is a primary issue for us right now.
We've gotten an email question from a listener. And by the way, if you want to email a question in, you do it by sending the email to nolimits@wfyi.org. This one's from a listener named Mike. Says that, does the community of Indianapolis have any housing for multiple residences? Residences surrounded by the community kitchen. In Canada, I've heard it referred to as a wheelhouse. Vancouver has an area where they made multiple apartment style housing. The houses were renovated into multiple apartments that had been a dilapidated area. The residents have to take care of the properties, something like Habitat for Humanity. Do we have any approach like that? Jim Morris, you're kind of nodding your head. I can't tell whether it's an affirmation or quizzically. So
it could be both. I know that if I hear that, I guess you can't quite hear an email, but if I hear what he's saying in the email, it essentially he's talking about, you know, they're for multifamily or multi-tenant. And sure, we have affordable multi-tenant opportunities in Indianapolis, and those are growing. Specific to exactly what he says, I'm looking at Andy. I don't know that we have
anything
exactly.
Well, it sounds like it's a kind of communitarian style of living where you share common areas, but almost like a dormitory style living on a more expanded level. Andy Fraser.
I don't know about the dormitory style, but there are certainly some projects that have been done over the years that are sort of rent-to-own opportunities done with federal subsidy and convened by local partners, where when you think of a multi-tenant building, it's usually one parcel of land where folks work together, if you will, in more of a single family, or maybe it's one or two families, a duplex-style development, where you do an entire project that's impacting the neighborhood but isn't in one particular building. And there have been a few of those over the years, nothing in development that I'm currently aware of.
We are talking about housing here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Bobby, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. I didn't know it was going to be so fast.
Certainly.
My question is, I wonder if there's a time limit before a program participant can sell his or her house.
Good question. Thank you very much for the call, Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll toss that. I think that one's directed more to Habitat for Humanity, Jim Morris. Is there amount of time that, say, Precious, who will be our example here since she's a living one in the studio, has to hold on to her house before she's able to sell it? I'll toss to you, Jim Morris.
Yes, it is a good question because we wouldn't want to have something to take advantage of in terms of quickly getting the house and then trying to turn it just for profit. But we encourage, obviously, the point of the home ownership is for long term, to transform long term. But obviously things come up. So new job, new opportunity might be there that wouldn't affect. So we try to keep you in there. 5 years is a real goal that we shoot for.
Do they have to sign an agreement to that effect, or is it?
Yeah, that's part of the program.
And Precious Bell, did that give you any pause when you were looking at it, thinking that's a five-year commitment?
No, because I knew I wasn't going anywhere, so I wasn't worried about it.
Okay, well, and I guess that raises also the question: what happens if someone does get underwater or they can't afford the house any longer, Jim Morris?
Another great question. I think that's part of what's important about our relationship, in that we are servicing the loan, and so that we maintain that relationship. We just had a great story recently where a gentleman and his wife got into divorce. He then lost his job. Mm-hmm. And
Not a great story to start off with.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. It's an instructive story.
And we were able to work closely with him. You know, we don't modify it because it's already no interest, but they'd already been in the home for several years. So we were able to readjust it to get it to an affordable rate for him. He found another job, didn't quite pay as much, but we kept him in the home that way.
And in those cases, that also raises another, you know, how do you determine who owns the house or whatever in the case of a divorce like that? Does that force you into being kind of a marriage broker, divorce lawyer?
We try to stay out of that portion of
it. Yeah, if you can. But if that happens, what is your...
Yeah, I mean, I think you the fallout is waiting for the divorce terms to wants the home and so forth, and we'll work with it from that end.
Is that a common problem for you?
No, it hasn't been a common problem. I mean, your normal challenges are loss of job, or underemployment begins, or the things that we've seen in the recession, challenges overall.
We are talking about housing and the 25th anniversary of Habitat for Humanity here in Indianapolis. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I am John Krall. My guests are Jim Morris, Precious Bell, Andy Frazier. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about housing, and we are marking the 25th anniversary of Habitat for Humanity's arrival in Indianapolis. My guests are Jim Morris, who is the president and CEO of Habitat for Humanity of Greater Indianapolis, Precious Bell, who is a Habitat homeowner, and Andy Frazier, who is the executive director of the Indiana Association for Community Economic Development. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Andy Frazier, right before the break, we were talking a little bit about what you were doing, what homeowners should do if they're facing either a foreclosure or some change in circumstance. I think Jim Morris had mentioned it. More often, it's either a job loss or underemployment or something like that. There are options when people are facing that. What are they?
There are. And I wanted to just, picking up on Jim's point, wanted to make sure listeners know that if they are challenged by foreclosure or having difficulty with their mortgages, there are resources available to help. A number of IECED members, my organization, participate in something called the Indiana Foreclosure Prevention Network, which you can find online at www.877-GetHope.org or on the telephone at 1-877-GET-HOPE. So
I'm going to have you do that again one more time, because most people would not have a pencil handy when you started to say that. So go get your pencils, folks. He's going to give you the number and the information again.
Yeah. So the web address is www.877gethope.org, and the telephone number is 1-877-GET-HOPE or 1-877-555-5555.
And if they call those numbers, what can be done for them?
They're going to be connected to a local housing counseling and foreclosure prevention resource in their community. They're also going to be connected with potentially a program called the Hardest Hit Funds, which is part of the national efforts, if you will, to stem the tide of foreclosure. So you'll talk to an operator on the phone, or you'll enter your information on the website and essentially be offered a referral to a local agency in your community, such as Prison Financial Advocates here in Central Indiana, or others across the state that will work with you to try and stabilize your home.
And is that still a huge problem here in Indiana? I mean, obviously we were one of the first to get hit by the foreclosure crisis, and it was pretty deep here. Has it stabilized? Has it begun to come back a little bit, Andy Frazier?
In comparison to the national landscape, I would say Indiana continues to be, we're not leading the nation anymore as we were sort of early on in the crisis.
Yeah, we were kind of the canary in the coal mine at that point. Yeah.
But we're still having a challenge, a significant challenge, and a lot of Hoosiers in this economic recession are confronted by either being underwater on their mortgage because of underemployment situations, loss of jobs. And so, yeah, it's something that our members who do that work continue to confront on a daily basis.
We are talking about housing here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Sybil, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Your question, please.
My question is prefaced by a comment first that I am a member of a multifamily housing community. It's an affordable housing community, and we have a mortgage that's, you know, underwritten by HUD, and it's due to be paid off next April, which means that we have some options to become homeowners of our units or our property if we exercise that option. And I was wondering, based on, you know, the previous conversation heard, if Habitat is interested in getting into multifamily housing.
Good question. Thank you very much for the call, Sybil. Well, Jim Morris, is Habitat interested in getting into multifamily housing?
It hasn't been in central Indiana. We haven't had that. Single-family housing is still our focus. We have had, depending on where you are in the country, there are over 1,500 Habitat affiliates across the country. If you're in the Northeast and, you know, Andy mentioned density, where there is more density, you know, they're building brownstones and condos in the Northeast. But we haven't had that from a need basis or from a from a desire from those in our program.
So to clarify, though, there are places in the United States where they are doing multifamily housing. Habitat is? Presumably,
but
it sounds like it's New York and other really closely packed where there's not an inch of unoccupied real estate anywhere on the island.
And to the, and usually at the case, it's a duplex kind of situation. It's not necessarily a huge, you know, multi-tenant situation.
Are there any other sort of fresh approaches that we, you know, that that would have particular application to Indianapolis? This idea, clearly, that this is somewhat the second inquiry we've got about multifamily or multi-unit housing developments. Andy Frazier, that that might have application to parts of Indiana.
So one of the things that we've seen, and ICED is fortunate to have a number of Habitat affiliates across the state in our membership, Evansville, LaPorte, Elkhart County, all members that come immediately to mind. A lot of them are starting to think, and we also have the good fortune of having the state supporting organization, Habitat for Humanity, the state Habitat supporting organization also involved with our organization. One of the things we're seeing with a number of Habitat affiliates is experimentation with their NRI work or neighborhood revitalization work. And that is Habitat thinking about not only its what I would call Ministry of Affordable Housing, if you will, and providing access to homeownership, but what is that local affiliate's role in changing the landscape of the community, breaking intergenerational cycles of poverty, creating access to opportunity. And similar to the discussion that we're having here in Indianapolis around comprehensive community development and sustainable communities and place-based impact, Habitats in other places are experimenting with those ideas of transformative neighborhood-level changes and what role do they play in that work.
We are talking about housing here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Howard, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. Your question, please.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say Habitat for Humanity is doing a wonderful job. My question is, obviously, abandoned houses are not livable. But it seems to me if we could get, if bankers and mortgage companies could let someone know of houses that are in danger of being abandoned, these houses should be livable. And is there some mechanism we could find out ahead of time which ones are in danger, and maybe we can save those? Maybe not for the people living there, but maybe we can get other people to rent it. Or I'm not sure what the solution is.
Well,
but it seems a waste to let houses be abandoned.
Good question, Howard. We will take it up. Thank you very much for the call. Well, I'll toss that out to anyone who wants it here. That is a real problem, that houses get abandoned. Is there a way to salvage them? Are there programs out there that involve salvaging those houses in ways that would allow someone like who was in Precious's situation 3 or 4 years ago would be able to move into them without building them? Jim Morris, you're the one who's making eye contact with me at the moment, so I'm going to pick you.
You know, I think there was a lot packed into that question, but he mentioned that abandoned houses might not be livable. Well, that would be the first, you know, assessing that. And Andy mentioned NRI with Habitat. And traditionally, we've been a new home, or we do, you know, fill a vacant lot approach to how we serve. But the NRI opens our service to look at abandoned homes and to look at acquiring those and rehabbing those and helping with homeowners. And so we're beginning that process as well, because you've asked what is that problem scale? Well, you know, depending on who you ask, between 10 and 15,000 abandoned homes exist in Indianapolis. So, you know, it isn't a small problem by any means. But there are, you know, banks, for example, if you talk about specifics on the action to actually get those abandoned homes, you know, in either a rehab state, you know, banks use systems that they try to, you know, work with nonprofits and others like ourselves to try to get that housing stock back into home ownership hands. And so there are several means, but the problem is quite large.
Andy Frazier, I'll ask the other part of his question is really, is there a mechanism for sort of intervening before the house is not usable anymore?
Yeah, what that requires is local capacity on the ground to be involved, whether it's a Habitat, whether it's a local community development corporation. As I said earlier in response to your question about need, IECED's legislative agenda in this coming legislative session very specifically deals with this issue of abandoned housing and trying to create the opportunity for local units of government to form what are called land banks in their local community. Indianapolis has one. It's part of the Department of Metropolitan Development right now. There's also a 501c3 organization, the Land Bank of Indianapolis, that's up and getting its legs under it at this point to be that I don't want to say exclusive enterprise, but that solely purpose type of organization that could be public, could be quasi-governmental, could be not-for-profit, to focus on this challenge of properties that are left unutilized in local communities. And so putting an emphasis, if you will, on how do you bring those back into the fold, make them available for homeowners, but also in the face of property tax caps in the state of Indiana, to bring them back on the tax rolls, because currently nobody's paying the taxes on them. And if your rates are capped, then obviously the way to grow the resources for local units to deliver the public services
and they're driving down property values all around them, all of those things. Greg, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. Your question, please.
Yes. I understand that in some communities, even here in Indiana, Habitat is actually entering into partnerships where they might help a small business enhance their facility, maybe like a child care center or a localized business that would enhance the integrity of the neighborhood, support family in the neighborhood, and actually help the whole neighborhood. You talked about that, neighborhoods and their identity. Is that something that you do here locally?
We'll take the question up. Thank you very much for the call, Greg. Thanks. Well, I think what he's asking is, Jim Morrison, that one seems to be directed to you as the spokesperson for Habitat for Humanity, is are there other areas besides building housing? Like, would you be involved in helping to build daycares? In some ways, it's the kinds of things that community redevelopment that Andy Frazier's been talking about. Is Habitat involved in any of that stuff here in Indianapolis or in Indiana?
Well, I think the key there is that building off what Andy said, you know, the challenges are large enough that what we do and what we specialize in and what our mission is home ownership. And so we realize we're only a part of the solution. So we will definitely be at the table when Andy speaks of comprehensive community development. We realize that the economics play a big part of it. The local business development plays a big part of it. We don't actually at this point go in and say help repurpose a commercial building, for example. That then starts to get into nonprofit lingo of mission drift, and we would get outside of our area of strength. But we're going to definitely be in that neighborhood, and the other neighborhood partners, we want to come in, and wherever the need is, we want to help then tip it in the right direction, walk alongside the other community partners. We've talked about community development corporations, other for-profit entities that are all trying to pour into a particular neighborhood. We're one of those things, but we haven't quite got into, if I heard the caller correctly in his inquiry, into actually getting into the realm of
bricks and mortar construction.
That
sort of stuff. Precious Bell, in terms of all of this, obviously it was a huge step for you to get into your own home. In terms of that next step and sort of developing or enhancing your lifestyle or the life of your child, what would be a next logical step there? You know, would it be daycare centers? Would it be better child care? Would it be better education, better schools? Would it be transportation? What would mean the most in terms of making your life a little easier and reducing some of the stresses and strains.
As far as my neighborhood goes, the vacant houses are really bad. And also the houses that are rental properties and the rental people that come in there, they're horrible. That would be better if we could, you know, some type of way the programs would be better and be geared toward people that actually care about their homes and don't just live in these houses and don't have utilities, don't cut their grass, all these different things like that. And a better daycare and more community centers and things like that would be great around the neighborhood.
We're talking about housing here on No Limits. You can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. And we have gotten a tweet from a listener who says, I used to be actively involved, but feel that building new houses is wasteful when Habitat should be basically rehabbing abandoned houses. Is that something that you've thought about, Jim Morris? Habitat has, rather than starting from scratch with houses, that they take a look at a structure that's already there and see if it can be brought back to active use.
Yeah, absolutely. That's part of that neighborhood revitalization initiative that NRI we've been talking about, in that we've opened up and broadened what we do. So the concentration is what Andy had touched on with comprehensive community development. We want to go in and realize there are neighborhoods and engage the neighbors, and they are the ones that are designing and coming up with what's locally called quality of life plans, and coming up with what will improve their neighborhood. And housing is generally a part of that mix of solution. And so we are a part of that solution. And if we can, you know, if we zero in, say, on a block and that block has two vacant lots and three abandoned homes, well, then sure, what makes sense is to actually go in and fill in those lots with home ownership, as Precious talks about. Then, you know, if you had three new homes, but you still have three abandoned homes sitting next to there, you know, that's going to have a barrier to the future success of that particular block. So yeah, in the past we hadn't been as focused on that, on rehabs, but that's where we're going, is on rehabs as well. The answer isn't an either or; it's a yes and.
Well, and Andy Frazier, I'm going to ask real quickly, what is the single biggest obstacle we face right now in meeting the housing challenge, the thing that we probably ought to work on either minimizing or removing if possible? Tough question, huh?
Yeah.
Sweeping one?
That is a sweeping question, and getting to the idea of the one biggest challenge. You know, I talked about resources. I think finding the this is more of a philosophical response, but finding the interconnectivities in our work between IECED members that represent that continuum of community economic opportunity, between the role of the public sector and the not-for-profit sector and the private sector to revamp communities, really sort of reaching outside of ourselves, if you will, to recognize that we're all in this together and sharing opportunities for revitalization and enhancement, is the thing that we keep talking to our members about. Irrespective of what they do, we're all in this together. How do the pieces of their work fit together?
We have had a very provocative conversation here. I'd like to thank you all for joining me. Andy Frazier, I'm not going to try to get through your organization's title because we'll run out of time. Jim Morris of Indiana Habitat for Humanity of Greater Indianapolis. Precious Bella, Habitat homeowner. I'd like to thank all of our listeners for joining us. We'll be back next week when we are talking about adoption. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.